Chapter 13, Saturday, June the 8th, through Friday, June 21st, 1776. I desire you would remember the ladies, and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could. That your sex are naturally tyrannical is a truth so thoroughly established as to admit of no dispute. But such of you as wish to be happy willingly give up the harsh title of master for the more tender and endearing one of friend. Letter of Abigail Adams to her husband, John. The front door opened the next morning as I walked down the stairs carrying Madam's chamber pot. It was Master Lockton, back from being arrested. His clothing was rumpled, and he looked as if he had not slept. He paused when he saw me.
Tell Becky I require strong coffee and food. Where is your mistress, and what is she doing?
Above, sir. I gripped the handle of the chamber pot tightly. Packing.
He stormed past me, bellowing for his wife.
As I dumped and washed out the chamber pot, I gave thanks.
'Twas clear he did not think me a spy.
When I went back inside, there came a ruckus and much shouting from the second floor. I joined Ruth and Becky at the foot of the staircase, the three of us listening with big ears as Lockton and Madam shouted at each other.
"Shh," Ruth said, putting her finger to her lips.
"That's right, little un," said Becky. "They don't pipe down soon. The whole neighborhood will turn out to watch."
Crash!
"Betcha that was the wash pitcher," she said.
Crash!
"And the basin," she added. "Do they often fight like this?" I asked.
"Often enough," Becky said.
She stopped as Madam cried out in pain. "The master likes to be obeyed. He's not happy she wants to head for Charleston, and she don't want to stay here."
Lockton lowered his voice some, but he was still angry and scolding.
"Should we do something?" I asked. "Perhaps Lady Seymour could calm him."
Becky shook her head.
"'Twould fire him up even more. Best not to discuss these things."
Ruth stuck her thumb in her mouth. Once the fighting had ended and the master had been served his meal, I took a cool compress and a mug of cold ale up to Madam. As she applied the compress to her swollen, split lip, she scolded me for not scraping candle wax that had dripped on the floor. "It caused me to fall," she said. "Do you see what your clumsiness has cost me?"
We both knew it was a lie. There was no wax on the floor. A few drops of blood stained the edge of the carpet.
"What do you have to say for yourself?" she asked.
I didn't like picking up the blame and carrying it, but I had no choice. I bowed my head. "I beg forgiveness, ma'am, and promise it will not happen again."
She removed the compress and winced. "It had better not."
In the weeks that followed, the master had me serve him whenever his companions visited. I listened closely to their conversating, but they blew only hot air, complaining about the Congress and the weather and the effect of war on business. I was relieved to hear that the printer, ink-stained, had fled the city with his wife and children. Lockton was certain that he had told the rebels about the money and the plan to bribe the American troops. My secret was safe. Becky brought back peas, greens, and gossip from the marketplace. The British fleet was in the harbor. No, the fleet had sailed for Jamaica. No, the Congress had negotiated a peace. No, the British planned to kill us all while we slept. Gossip is the foul smell from the devil's backside. That's what Mama always said. I tried to ignore the wild stories and stay alert for something, anything, I might use to secure our freedom. Becky had been quite happy to give me the chore of hiking up to the tea water pump every day. After my first few visits, it became the favorite part of my day. The pump was set in a little shed at the edge of the common, a big gathering place ringed by army barracks, the poorhouse, and the jail. There were trees and fields to the north of the common and the burying place for Africans. The air was cleaner up there, easier to breathe. A week after Lockton returned home, Corzin stood with me in the line of servants waiting for water. I was desperate to ask him questions, but knew they had to wait until we were alone. When my turn came, I handed my buckets to the ancient slave who worked the pump handle, a man old as dirt, with stone gray hair, and skin the color of the night sky. He carried a country mark on his face.
three straight lines that had been cut into his right cheek when he became a man in Africa. Papa had a mark that looked close to it. It made me feel kin to the old man, and I smiled and curtsied polite whenever I saw him.